Hi, this is Barry List of Informs, and we're talking today with Greta Roberts of Talent Analytics. Greta is co-author of a research brief for the International Institute of Analytics about quantifying analytical talent. Greta, what is talent analytics, and how did you come to co-author a study that takes a deep look at analytics talent in the marketplace and also uses the very tools of analytics to identify job candidates?
Thanks, Barry. Yes, Talent Analytics, I would say, is the leading organization of using an analytics approach to model and optimize employee performance. And we came to co-author a study with the IIA as I was on the phone call with them one day, probably 2 years ago, and listening to some of the world's leading analytics professionals talk about what is a data scientist, what is an analytics professional, and they were using words like, I think they're creative, why don't you ask them if they're artistic, or how about if we use this kind of question? And I thought, you know, we're an analytics organization and we're analytics professionals, we can do better than this. And at that point suggested to the IIA that we co-author a study with them to use an analytics approach, and in fact to use the talent analytics approach of measuring raw talent or aptitude in analytics professionals, because my suspicion was that there actually was a very strong fingerprint with this set of folks.
And obviously at this point in time, analytics has become a part of the HR field, or at least those who are wise enough to realize its value.
Yes, absolutely. And we're seeing it, I'd say, even over the last 8 to 12 months, we've seen a huge increase in how HR and talent areas are beginning to use analytics for hiring and looking for something other than the standard resume and that sort of thing, for really understanding, is this person going to be a good fit in a role, and really for predicting that.
What surprised you about your results? Was there anything that stood out?
You know, the one thing that there were three things that stood out that we two of them we weren't expecting. The one thing that I did expect, but it was nice to see the data show this as well, was really how strong a fingerprint there is for analytics professionals. And the results were clear, again, anecdotally, based on what we've been, you know, looking at over the years, and we've been around about 13 years, so we've been looking at a lot of data. I really believed that these folks weren't as hard to find as a lot of the literature would have you believe, and that they really weren't a very different breed of person that all of a sudden came around. So it was so staggeringly clear. The data showed it, particularly in areas of measuring curiosity and creativity and things like that, off the charts. You can't deny it. So that was the first thing. The second thing that kind of was more in the demographics was that we were talking to, even though we were measuring and looking at some extremely large organizations and deep dive analytics professionals that worked for extremely large organizations, that they were still working in very small teams. And so the average team size was around 10 people, of analytics people. Now, there might be 15 teams of 10 people, you know, 10 analytics people around the organization, but they were still working in very small teams. And I suspected that, so I was wrong on that.
So whether it's Procter & Gamble or a small consulting firm, you're not seeing huge departments.
We really weren't, no. Even inside of huge organizations, they were still working in small teams. So that was different for me. And then the third thing that I saw was, and we'll talk about something that we found, which we called functional clusters, but one of the clusters that we measured was called a data preparation person. And I went into the study believing that data preparation was probably more of a transition role, and maybe you started out in data preparation and moved into other functions. But there are lots of people that stay in data prep and presumably enjoy that. And that's a long-term career move for some people, staying in data preparation. Those are really the three things that jumped out at me.
And certainly data, one might think, if one isn't actively involved in the field, that it's something that you put together quickly and then you move on to the deeper analysis, but clearly you have an insight here.
You mean in terms of the study?
Right.
Yeah, no, this was a very sophisticated study, I believe. I mean, we did not, I want to make it clear, our reason for the study was to make it actionable and practical and what we wanted, and not purely academic. So we were absolutely looking for what can we learn from people in, you know, in the field doing deep dive analytics. But we were joined on our committee in terms of how we put things together with, first of all, our chief scientist, Pasha Roberts, myself, and then Bill Franks from Teradata, who's the chief analytics officer at Teradata, also a faculty of the IIA, Bob Morrison, who's a co-author with Tom Davenport on his analytics, some of his analytics books, et cetera. So I think in terms of some of the additional questions we were asking in our approach and our methodology, it feels extremely solid to me. That was really important to me.
Sure. And in your report, you express a concern that with all the predictions by McKinsey and others about growth and big data and analytics, there's a bunch of hype out there, too. What is that hype?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I tend to be a little skeptical of anybody's hype. And so that was my concern that I have for hype, and part of the reason that we started doing the study was that a lot of hype around, we're going to be missing by the year, you know, pick a year, you know, X number of million people that we're not going to be able to satisfy. And I think a lot of hype that analytics professionals or data scientists or a breed of person, kind of mind that the world just really hasn't seen yet. And I saw, and you continue to see even today, more and more and more criteria put on the data scientist role or the analytics professional role. And I thought, you know what, the first thing we do as analytics people is to categorize. We can't just keep putting on a bunch of requirements and not put those into categories. And I suspected that once we peeled all that away, that there was something underneath in terms of an aptitude that we could say, oh, yeah, we've these people have been around for a really long time. They might be doing new things like, that might be different, machine learning and things like that. But really at the heart of it or at the root of it, these really are people that have been around for a long time. And so to me, one piece of hype is, I just think these people are around. They're not that hard to find. If you are using something other than traditional criteria or, you know, how many years have you been doing this? The other hype that I think is there is that I've had this out-of-body experience with talking with folks that are recruiters in data and analytics and specialize in that and do an extraordinary job. And in speaking with them, what they say they need is not candidates, which to me you would think that's what they would be looking for, that they have so many, you know, requirements opening from their corporate accounts, they can't find the candidates.
Right.
What they're experiencing is that they don't have the jobs. They don't have the job requisitions. They have way too many candidates. And so to me, it seems like there's a disconnect that everybody is trumpeting that there's a supply problem, a supply of analytics professionals. I actually believe, and the study didn't show that, but this is a bit of what I'm suspecting, is that it's actually a demand problem. That people are still getting their arms around what analytics can do. Everybody believes they should be doing a lot of analytics, but they don't have those big, you know, the really big assignments, the deep dive analytics, strategic assignments. And so I think there's a bit of hype that people are kind of pointing at supply. I think it may be more of a demand problem.
That could be a very significant finding. I guess we'll have to peer into it in greater detail as we go forward.
Yep.
Looking at the raw data of your study, so what did you see in terms of demographics, in terms of the people in the field, their age, their gender, their educational level, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. We got a lot of data that we pulled together, and some of the highlights were that really struck us is that it's a very young audience that we were looking at. And our criteria for including people in the study, and there were people that we tossed out, were that they were using, again, we came up with this term deep dive analytics professional, which meant that they were using tools more sophisticated than a spreadsheet to do their algorithms and analytics. And so they could also use a spreadsheet, but not only use a spreadsheet. So this population that we profiled, and we had, I think, either 302 or 304 deep dive analytics professionals that were included in this study, they were a very young audience. 57% were under 40 years old, We also found that 72% were male, which I think is pretty consistent with most of the STEM roles that are out there. You know, most were very new to analytics. They were new to the company that they were working in, and they were new to their role. And I think this is really interesting in terms of thinking about, you may have people that really, you know, understand analytics. Maybe they've, you know, recently learned R or some of the other things they've learned in colleges. But a lot of them are very new into business and into that particular business.
Those of us in operations research don't see the field as new, but most of the analytics world views the field as fairly fresh, as you were just saying. Is that reflected in your look at the current pool working in analytics, just following up on what you were just saying?
Yeah, well, what we see, a couple of things, you know, when we looked at the talent analytics data and the aptitude data, we would say, wow, no, these people have been around forever, right? They're just in a new role. So the role is new, but the people and kind of that mentality and that aptitude is actually not new. What we did see, though, in our research is that, as an example, 29% of the people in our population had been working in an analytics role as for less than 5 years. So about 30%, about a third of the people that are, you know, were in our population had been working for less than 5 years in their current analytics role.
Let me remind our listeners that this is Barry List of Informs, and you're listening to a podcast with Greta Roberts of Talent Analytics. What are the four main analytics tasks that professionals cluster around? That's a very important part of not only this research brief, but a previous paper that you published.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. One thing that we wanted to collect and that we wanted to put some description to was, people talk about data scientists or analytics professionals as if it's one function, and that there's one thing you do inside of that role. And so with the folks that were on our research team, we built what we called a workflow that started out with, data acquisition and collection, analysis design, data preparation, data analytics, data mining, programming, visualization, interpretation, presentation, administration, and managing other analytics professionals. So I don't know, something like 12 or 13 different functions inside of that role.
Which is what HR people do. You get that specific.
Yeah, exactly. And we asked them during the study, how many hours per week do you spend on these particular areas? Because we really wanted some insight, like, really, what are they doing? Is it all one thing? Is it heavily weighted in one area or another? And what we found out, again, when we were using, you know, doing our analytics on the data that we got back, was that there were actually what we called four functions that clustered together. So as an example, data acquisition, data preparation, and the actual analytics and model writing really clustered together. And so we named that function data preparation. And then you saw that programming and doing some analytics functioned together. We called that a programmer. Then you had the manager role, where you saw management, administration, presentation, interpretation, and design, and we called that a manager. And then we had the last function, which was called the generalist. So it was extremely clear that there are certain functions that tend to cluster together, and a single individual would tend to do three or four things inside of that workflow. And so it started to be clear to us, you know, for you to go in or for a company to say, I need to hire a data scientist or an analytics professional that can do all of these. We did see some generalists, but it's a lot more difficult to find the generalist that can really do that entire workflow extremely well.
So do you want to take a moment just distinguishing a little bit between these categories?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the things that we saw as we look at what we termed then the functional clusters, if you want to think about the data preparation people as an example, or think about workflow, we tended to see, and if you think about the workflow going from left to right, we tended to see the data preparation people doing, and actually most of the time in the entire workflow was spent near either the beginning of the project or the end of the project. And at the beginning of the project, there was so much time spent in design, data acquisition, data preparation, analysis, and most of that time was spent with the data preparation people. The big chunk of the time in the middle was spent by programming and visualization. And then a lot of the time on the end, once the results were coming through in the presentation, et cetera, was spent by the managers, with very little time spent by the manager function doing the data acquisition, data preparation, analysis, and all that sort of thing. And so I think it's really interesting to think about, you know, when you're hiring an analytics professional, do you want them to be more heavily loaded in terms of what they do with the acquisition and data cleansing and data preparation? Or are they more on the, you know, in the final presentation, et cetera? And to me, this is a hypothesis I had, when I heard sort of criteria for the role where they had to be, you know, we're looking for a data scientist that can do all the, you know, data acquisition, et cetera, and then just be this fabulous presenter and do all the administration and then also manage a team. I thought that's a different person. Yes, it needs to be done, but quite clearly what we see in our research is that is being done, but it tends to be done by different people.
So I'm assuming then that if a person comes to you and they want to open up an analytics department in their organization and they say hire a bunch of analytics people, you're going to be advising them that you have to very carefully delineate people within these four categories or else you're not going to have a working analytics department.
Definitely, I think it seems to be very helpful to people to actually think about what they do in those roles. It's, I think, a lot easier to just throw up a job description that you copy from somebody else on the web and say we need a data scientist or an analytics professional. But there's going to be, if you're looking for a manager, you know, who ends up doing all the management and visualization and presentation, and really what you need them to do is data cleansing and all of that, it's a really different kind of person. So, yes, I would absolutely advocate that they think about what is it that you need, because they are different people.
Your research shows an analytics personality. What is that?
Part of what Talent Analytics does, again, is take a look at things that we call your raw talent, kind of what are you born with that makes things very easy for you to do. You just have this natural proclivity. And so raw talent, or your aptitude, if you will. Tom Davenport talks a lot about having the right skill set and also that it's important to have the right mindset. And so you can think about the work Talent Analytics does is really using a quantitative approach to understand that mindset. And that the mindset would be the personality that you're talking about. So it was really quite clear when we looked at the mindset or the raw talent of the analytics professionals that we took a look at that the number one thing that jumped out that was so over the top was that they're intellectually curious. And in preparation for this study, we had also had quite a few conversations with leading analytics professionals to talk about what are the mistakes they made, what do they always look for that works out. Intellectual curiosity seems to be the number one thing that everybody's looking for, and we were able to measure that and see that regardless of the functional cluster, that was really the number one thing. And so intellectual curiosity seems to be much more interesting to people and important than actually knowing a certain skill. Here's the reason. Because if you bring somebody in, as an example, that knows SAS or knows R or Python or whatever it would end up being, potentially it took them a very long time to learn that. What it seems that people are looking for is the desire to learn, because technology is keeping up so fast, it is happening so fast, and you need that person to have the desire to be intellectually curious. And so intellectual curiosity was the number one thing that we saw. The second thing that we saw was that they have a deep desire for creative assignments, kind of an outside-of-the-box approach to saying, yes, that worked this way, but how about if we look at it from a different angle?
And this is kind of counterintuitive. This is kind of counterintuitive because usually we associate creativity with the arts, but here you're looking at creativity in science and in a technical field.
Yeah, it's actually a great point, and that was actually, if I had a fourth thing that surprised me about the study, we did ask people, and we asked them to write it in, what their majors were in college, because I wanted to see, were there creative degrees in there, because I literally have seen people say, should we just hire artists, which made me insane. To just go after one variable. But so I wanted to see, and we literally, of our entire population, I think we had 5 people that had any kind of creative degree whatsoever. I think if we might have had an additional question saying, did you minor in anything creative, we might have picked something up. So what we're seeing is that they're creative, but they don't desire something creative enough to go after and actually major in it. So it actually is the same creativity. Just you want that sort of artistry in terms of looking at data and a many-sided approach of really trying to understand the data. But it is interesting. You don't necessarily think about it that way.
Right. And to some extent, you talk about minors. You will find that there are some mathematicians who have a higher aptitude in music, for example.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dean Abbott, who's just a great, I don't know if you know Dean or not, but he was part of our study. I know he wouldn't mind us telling you this, and he's the one that said, you know, Greta, I minored in English, which, you know, you would see would be a creative degree, or we do have people that are artistic, like you said, in guitar, music, or even their painters, et cetera. And so, you know, they have that, but not enough to go and actually get a major in it. So that creative approach we saw extremely strong across the board. The other things that were very strong, and we actually have numbers that we were able to attach, that this is kind of the ideal score in intellectual curiosity as well as creativity, is that they tend to be a group of people that are very rigorous and disciplined in believing. So they believe in analytics, they believe in what they believe is the right way, and that they're contributing to something better. So that across the board as well was an insight that we had not thought about, but that would probably, I've been at a lot of analytics conferences, and you see a lot of heated discussions, and, you know, this is the right way, no, this is the right way, that sort of thing, and we were able to see that.
How do you screen? You're presented, you have a client, and you're trying to find the right candidate for them. How do you screen, and for those job seekers out there, what can they learn from this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So as a result of the study, we actually did come out with what I believe continues to be the world's only industry benchmark for analytics professionals that was a result of this study. So we have 11 numbers, 11 scores, essentially, that are inside of our system that's called Advisor. And part of the reason we wanted to do this was to actually provide a comparable, if you will, so that for people that are hiring, they can actually compare their candidates to this. So it's an extremely easy process. People can just administer the questionnaire, which takes about 23 minutes. The results are calculated instantly, and then your candidate or your existing employees can be compared against the industry benchmark. And the system goes ahead and outlines very quickly, you know, these are some areas that you may want to probe a little more on. It doesn't say hire, no hire, but it definitely does scale them between 1 and 100 and say this is what, as compared to the industry benchmark as a result of this, these are areas that we would have a concern. So they could use that. It's extremely easy, and we put it out there for others to license.
Do you have any advice for people looking for jobs in the field? How do they put their best foot forward?
Yeah, okay, it's a great question. I've been contacted a lot by people on LinkedIn and elsewhere just because of what we do, saying, you know, I'm a recent graduate or I'm coming from another kind of area inside of my organization, but I've always had a fascination with numbers. And, you know, do you believe that, you know, there's any opportunity for me to, you know, in the field of analytics? And I'm pretty quick to offer them the opportunity, you know, here and there to, you know, compare themselves. And very often we find out that, you know, according to our benchmark and their comparison, that the people that really yearn after that and continue to say, this is what I do, it's how my brain thinks, it's what I'm always doing, that they're actually a fairly good match. The one thing that I would say is to use analytics in helping you to find a job. And to realize and to demonstrate, even if you're somebody that's, you know, either out of another area and you don't have much experience, or if you are a recent graduate, probably if you're a great match towards what people are looking for, you've been doing your own experiments, whether, you know, you've been trying to figure out, you know, how you got the grade you did, or, you know, how many people in your class got a certain percentage, or whatever. There's experiments that you're probably doing. And I would use those as great examples and just show the people that you're interviewing with that you're sort of consumed with the desire to learn and be intellectually curious. So to really use your analytics approach to help you with that, with your interviews, et cetera.
What makes an analytics professional happy? Good salary, obviously, but what else satisfies a person, makes them a good fit for a job?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question. This is something that's kind of consumed me because as I, you know, read way too many job ads for analytics professionals and talk to a lot of analytics professionals and then on the other hand speak to people that call up and say, I was able to find them and hire them and then they left. And I'll say, why did they leave? And they say, ah, they left somewhere to get a 30% increase in salary. I don't believe that. I think it's the biggest excuse. And it's the easiest thing for a candidate to say on the way out. Our data would actually say that the thing that is most meaningful to an analytics professional is important work, and interesting work. Money matters to all of us, but, we're having a number of conversations, one we're actually having tomorrow as well, with somebody who's a blue match to our benchmark, which means she's the top that you could possibly be. And in asking her this question, she said, you know what, I came to where I am today, from a job that paid me more, and actually had her on a regular schedule for getting increases because it was a government position and she was making a lot more money there, but she was bored. What analytics professionals care about is interesting work that keeps them busy, and doing work that they care about. So don't let them get bored. It's really not about money.
We only have time for a couple more questions. I actually wanted to circle back to something that you said earlier because I thought it was fascinating. You talked about a demand problem in the marketplace. Is this something that needs to be researched more? Is this a problem that should be addressed? Because if so, we don't want to be turning out more analytics professionals in our colleges than we have places for. We don't want them to find the fate that lawyers are currently finding in the marketplace.
Right, right. I think now this is just, you know, the news according to Greta, but I was really stunned by it because I've been you know, again, just obviously we focus a lot in this area and I've seen the disconnect between, you know, there aren't a huge number of people focusing on recruiting analytics professionals, but there are enough and we know most of them. And as I talk to them, just the disconnect between them saying, you know, no, I don't need candidates. What I need are people that are looking for people. And I've been starting to form that opinion. And then also I think it was last week or so in there was an article that came out called The STEM Crisis is a Myth. I don't know if you've seen that article or not. And he argues, it was Robert Charette that argues for a similar thing, that he believes the STEM crisis is a myth. He's very well thought out. But I think there's something to, I think it's very easy to blame it on supply and to say, oh, we can't do any analytics things here because, you know, we don't have enough analytics professionals. But when I talk to people about what they're doing, and, you know, people are doing amazing analytics work, but I think that I think it's hard for people to, at an executive strategic level, get their arms around what strategic analytics work would be. And so if they can push that off onto saying it's an HR problem because they can't find the people versus the demand problem, I think there's something to that. I really do. And it's just my sense. I haven't proven it. That wasn't part of our research. But I think there actually does need to be something research into that area.
Final question. You've spoken about the value of the INFORM Certified Analytics Professional Program, CAP. How does CAP help the HR person?
I think what's so great about the INFORM's Certified Analytics Professional Program is that, you know, it's similar to the benchmark that we came out with. There aren't a lot of ways for the HR person or the hiring manager to really distinguish between who's, you know, who's really certified or who's good in this area and who is not. It's a newish, you know, a newer area, or certainly this iteration is a newer area. And so what I think is extraordinary about INFORM's certification program is that it does provide a standardized way of comparing this person to that person, and typically on a CAPS certification, that person has gone above and beyond on their own time to complete this with confidence. And I think it's a great differentiator because it's a standardized way of taking a look at candidates. So we completely endorse it. We think it's a great thing.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Greta Roberts of Talent Analytics. Greta, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Barry, and I really appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more information about operations research and analytics and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org today. And remember, keep on crunching those numbers.